All right. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Welcome back
to the Blick Chicks podcast.
I'm Allison.
And I'm Jane.
I almost just said, I'm Jane. Whoa, I had to think about that for a second.
Yeah. It's a pressing question. What's your name?
Rough day.
Rough day. Really?
No.
Okay, good. I was like, it's Saturday.
You were like, what? Nope, I slept in super late today.
I did too.
I'm feeling good.
Me too. Me too.
I was like, it's sleepy day for Allison.
Yes. So, what are we talking about today?
Do the right thing.
Do the right thing. Finally.
I can't even wait to get into it. Oh, this movie.
This movie, 1989, Spike Lee's second feature film.
Indeed. It was a critical and commercial success. It received numerous accolades, including Academy Award nominations for Best Original Screenplay and Best Supporting Actor.
It won Best Original Screenplay, I'm pretty sure. No, it didn't?
No, Spike Lee has never won an Oscar until Black Klansman.
Until Black Klansman,
was his very first Oscar ever. Yeah. But he's been nominated a ton.
Yeah.
And I believe this was his first film for which he was ever nominated.
Yeah,
for an
his
Oscar.
First film was She's Gotta Have It.
Yeah, which I don't think was nominated for anything. This was by far more well-received than his first film.
This movie's so good.
It's
I'd never seen it.
I had in one of my film classes, but it had been like over a year since I'd watched it.
Yeah, you'd forgotten a couple things.
I have forgotten quite a lot. I was like, I knew what happened at the end. But
the ride.
I forgot. Oh, very good.
So it stars Spike Lee.
Yes.
And Rosie Perez.
Yep. And
Samuel L. Jackson's in it.
Yes, he is, although he's not a huge part. John Savage is in it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a lot of super, super famous people. His sister's in it.
Yeah.
Let's get into the plot.
Definitely.
Mookie is a 25-year-old pizza delivery man living in Bedford. Oh, I can't say this. I know this is a real place.
Stuyvesant? I don't know.
Stuyvesant, Brooklyn, basically, is what I thought. Yeah. I don't know if they ever really say it. With his sister Jade. He and his girlfriend Tina have a toddler son named Hector. Mookie works at a local pizzeria owned by Sal, an Italian-American who has been in the neighborhood for 25 years. Mm-hmm. Sal's eldest son, Pino, is racist and does not get along with Mookie. As you wouldn't if you were racist. Mookie's black.
Vito is very cool, though.
Yep. Because of this, Pino is at odds with his father, who refuses to leave the majority African-American neighborhood, and his younger brother, Vito, who is friendly with Mookie.
There's a scene where, Pino is talking about how his friends all laugh at him because they live there in, like, the...
Well, they don't even live here. But they work here. Yeah. They live in an Italian-American neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, like, his friends all laugh at him because he has to serve... The black people, basically, and how that's, like, embarrassing that he, an Italian-American, has to serve black people.
But Sal's like, they're not your friends if they laugh at you. You know who are your friends? The people who pay you and the people who put food on your, who put food on your table and a roof over your head.
Yeah.
Saying is that, like, also, these are the people who are, like...
And he also says, like, you know, these people, like, they like us.
Yeah.
Like, sure, not all of them like us,
but I've,
like,
never had any trouble.
Yeah.
And everyone likes Sal in the neighborhood, pretty much.
Yeah, pretty much people get along with Sal.
And because he's been there for 25 years, so all the kids who are, like, 25 years old have all grown up on his food.
I mean, look, they're, like, a little at odds. It's a majority African-American neighborhood, and he's a white guy.
Yeah.
So they're not, like, wow, best friends with Sal. But they have no issue with him. And
no.
They enjoy his pizza, and they give him their business, and they are aware.
Yeah.
So, many distinctive residents are introduced, including DeMayor, a friendly drunk, Mother Sister, who watches the neighborhood from her brownstone, Radio Rahim, who blasts Public Enemy on his boombox wherever he goes, and Smiley, a mentally disabled man who meanders around the neighborhood trying to sell hand-colored pictures of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. While at Sal's, Mookie's friend Buggin' Out, known for his attraction to the opposite sex, questions Sal about his wall of fame. A wall decorated with photos of famous Italian Americans. Buggin' Out demands. I don't know why I said that. I said it like he was bugging out. That's his name. Buggin' Out.
Buggin' Out is his name. Yeah.
Buggin' Out demands that Sal put up pictures of black celebrities since Sal's pizzeria is in a black neighborhood. Sal replies that it is his business and he can have whoever he wants on the wall. Buggin' Out attempts to start a protest over the wall of fame, but essentially
No one's interested because they all love Sal's Pizza.
They keep going like, we're going to boycott Sal's. And everyone's like, yeah, I'm not going to boycott Sal's.
I'm going to get a slice right now.
And they're like, in fact. Yeah, they do not care. Nobody cares. It is a non-issue.
Yeah.
During the day, local teenagers open a fire hydrant and douse the other neighbors to beat the heat wave off before officers intervene. After a phone call, okay, I went before this. There's a guy that shows up who is like an Italian, American mm-hmm. also. He's driving through the neighborhood, and he's got, like, an antique car, like, a nice car.
Convertible.
And the fire hydrant's open, and he tells them, like, hey, don't spray my car. And they're like, man, we're not gonna spray your car, but he keeps being like, don't spray my car, don't spray my car. And so then they do spray his car, because he's being an asshole.
Yeah, you could have just said, hey, please don't spray my car, and then gone.
They could have probably just driven through, and nothing would have happened.
Yeah.
But they do spray his car. He gets out, the officers show up because of the fire hydrant's open, mm-hmm. and the guy tries to, like, make an arrest, but basically the officers say, like, buddy, we don't care.
This is not a big deal.
Leave. And the officers say something. They say, we suggest you get back in that car before people start stripping it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can tell what the officers think of this neighborhood.
Yes.
Pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Let me take a little drink.
A little sippy sip.
Mm-hmm. Okay. After a phone call, Mookie and Pino begin arguing over race. The phone call is Mookie to Tina. Tina's basically upset because Mookie doesn't see her a lot.
Doesn't come around. He only comes around like once a week, but he's working a ton.
Yeah, but he does have a son, so it's kind of like, you should probably come around a little more. And they don't really seem to live that far away from each other.
Yeah.
Like walking distance, mm-hmm. so.
I mean, he delivers a pizza to her on foot.
Yeah. So, you could visit her a little more, couldn't you? But they begin arguing over race. Mookie confronts Pino about his negative attitudes toward African Americans, although Pino's favorite celebrities are black. So, yeah, he basically is like, how can you... Because basically Pino calls him the N-word.
Yeah.
And he says, you're always going on N-word this, N-word that, but what about, you know, Prince? And what about Magic Johnson?
Yeah.
And all these people? Are those people, like...
What about Eddie Murphy? You love Eddie Murphy.
Yeah, he's like, are they N-words and all this stuff? And he's like, well...
No, it's different.
Because he's like, they're black, but they're not really black.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, they are really black, actually, yes. That's basically what he says is, well, they're not really black. And he's just like, man, just lay off, okay?
Yeah.
Just lay off. I don't care about you. Just lay off. Various characters express racial insults. Mookie against Italians, Pino against African Americans, Latino Stevie against Koreans, and White Officer Gary Long against Puerto Ricans and Korean owner Sonny against Jews.
It's really interesting the way that it's shot. It's like,
it's like they're yelling into the camera.
Yeah, each person is yelling into the camera in, like, a very symmetrical, like, the same shot. It's very interesting.
Yeah, and there's these really over-the-top, almost, like, comical...
Yeah. Strings of racial insults. Yeah.
And it's, like, they're all directed at weird, different things. Like, nobody that dislikes one group, that group doesn't dislike...
Yeah.
That, they have no problem. I mean, you know, the Italians and the African-Americans kind of have a problem, but they obviously... Pino and Mookie have a personal problem.
Yeah.
So... It's really funny. Pino expresses his contempt for African-Americans to Sal, but Sal insists he will not leave the neighborhood. That night, Buggin' Out, Radio Raheem, and Smiley march into Sal's and demand that Sal change the Wall of Fame.
Okay, this is what I was thinking about last night. So, they're about to, like, close up, and Mookie's about to get paid. And then this group of kids, start knocking on the door, and Mookie's like, hey, we're closed, go away. And then Sal's like, no, like, I'm happy to give them four slices. They grew up on my food, it's an honor. And then
mentions it a lot, how he feels very privileged to have watched these kids grow up on his food, and how important that is to him.
Yeah.
That he, like, sees them as, like...
Part of his family.
Part of his family.
And right before he's letting these people in, he told Mookie, like, I want to call this Sal and Sons.
And then he tells Mookie,
like,
you always have a place here because you're basically like a son to me.
Yeah. And also, Sal has a crush on Mookie's sister, BT Dubs.
Oh, yeah. This is a very bizarre movie because, so if you back up even further, there's a part where, so Radio Raheem, as I said in the thing, he's this guy, the whole movie, he basically has this really nice jukebox.
Really
nice. Probably took, like, years to save up for.
Yeah, it's enormous. It's obviously bigger than everyone else on the block.
There's even a scene very specifically where he and another guy, like, face off.
With their boomboxes.
With their boomboxes, and his wins, because it's much better. But he always plays Fight the Power.
Yeah, which was specifically written for this movie.
Yeah. Which is great. It's actually a really popular song now.
Yeah, yeah.
So he always plays this Fight the Power. Always, always, always. And everyone hates it. Even the black people, they
everyone
hate it.
Everyone hates it. They're like, shut up,
it's not
dude.
They, like, or like, they hate the song. It's just like, if it's all you ever heard,
yeah,
you would hate it. But Radio Ahim loves the song and will not turn it off. So he comes into Sal's with the jukebox. And Sal's like, oh my god, Radio Rahim, turn this shit off. Like, no music in here. Radio Rahim won't turn it off. And he's like, turn the shit off. Finally, Radio Rahim turns it off, gets his license, leaves.
Mm-hmm.
Then he runs into Buggin' Out.
Mm-hmm.
And Buggin' Out is going on and on about how we need to boycott Sal's because he won't put black people up on the wall. And then Radio Rahim is upset because Sal
won't let him
play his music. And then Smiley is just really likes both of them, so he goes along with it.
Yeah.
And basically, that's why they decide to, like, barge in.
Yeah, so they barge in after Sal has let all these kids in to have a last piece of pizza before they close up. So they barge in, and they start, you know, screaming at Sal about how he needs to put black people up on the wall.
And Sal's like, you need to leave. So, Rahim's boombox is blaring, and Sal demands that he turn it off, but he refuses.
Mm-hmm.
Buggin' Out calls Sal and Sons guinea bastards and threatens to close down the pizzeria until they change the Wall of Fame. And he basically threatens to, like, make it so that they can't open. Like, not boycott it, but, like, force it to close.
Yeah.
Frustrated and angry, Sal calls Buggin' Out a N-word.
Yeah.
And then everyone starts freaking out. Mm-hmm. And all the people that were like, get out of here, Buggin' Out, like, they start being like,
so you
are racist.
Yeah.
Which, like, we know.
Yeah, but they just thought they were like, oh, he just wants him to not play his music. Mm-hmm. Because we're all annoyed by the music.
Right, yeah, exactly. Everyone through the whole movie has been like, Radio Rahim, will you turn that shit off?
We've heard the song literally a million times.
But when he calls him the N-word, mm-hmm. everyone turns against him. And they are like, well, hold on. You don't get to just say that because you're upset. But Sal won't back down. And he destroys Radio Rahim's boombox with a bat.
Mm-hmm.
Rahim attacks Sal because he finally snaps, leading to a fight that spills out into the street and attracts a crowd. The police arrive, break up the fight, and apprehend Rahim and Buggin' Out. Despite the pleas of onlookers, one officer refuses to release his chokehold on Rahim and kills him.
Brutal scene.
Oh, it's fucked up.
They show it all.
It's, yeah, and we'll kind of talk about this a little more, like, but Spike Lee, in this movie very specifically, the Dutch angles are intense. He uses really intense, like, Dutch angles and really close zooms to kind of, like, show that, like, instability and how everything is really uncomfortable. The tensions are running very high. And you watch, just close up Dutch angle, you literally watch Rahim
die.
And it's interesting because the onlookers, like, basically as soon as he starts having trouble breathing, the onlookers are like, whoa, you're killing him. And then once he really starts having trouble breathing, even the other officers are like, stop. They're
like,
stop.
Like, let him go, you're going
to
kill him.
And he doesn't. And the one officer just refuses. All the other officers are trying to get him to stop.
Yeah.
But they're not, I mean, you know.
You know, they're not really.
When I say trying, I mean asking.
They're saying no. They should just, you know, go up to him and stop him.
Stop him, but they're not. So, realizing that Rahim has been killed in front of witnesses, the officers place his body in the back of a squad car and drive off.
So upsetting.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also take Buggin' Out, and they keep hitting him in the stomach with their police batons.
It's really interesting, too, because there's a time when they're like, why aren't you arresting the Italians? Why aren't you arresting the Italians? Because, I mean, here's the thing. Okay. Well, we're almost to the end.
Let's finish the Wikipedia.
Yeah. The onlookers, enraged about Radio Rahim's death, blame Sal and his sons. Demeyer tries to convince the crowd that Sal was not responsible for his death, but the crowd remains where they are. Mui grabs a trash can and throws it through the window of Sal's pizzeria, sparking the crowd to rush into the store and destroy it. Smiley sets the building on fire, and DeMayer pulls Sal, Pino, and Vito out of the mob's way. Firemen and riot patrols arrive to put out the fire and disperse the crowd. After they issue a warning, the firefighters turn their hoses on the rioters, leading to more fighting and arrests. Mookie and Jade sit on the curb, watching in disbelief. Smiley wanders back into the smoldering building and hangs one of his pictures on what is left of Sal's Wall of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, after an argument with Tina, Mookie returns to Sal.
This scene is so good.
He feels that Mookie has betrayed him, but Mookie demands his weekly pay. The two men argue and then cautiously reconcile after Sal pays Mookie.
It's really interesting. So Mookie's like, give me my $250. You owe me $250.
And then, he's like, you don't work here anymore.
You don't work here. And they get in a fight. And then Sal's like, fine. And so he takes out $500 and just throws it at him. And then Mookie's like, you owe me $250.
And so he gives him back $200 and then goes, I owe you $50. And then Sal's like, no, keep it. And he's like, no, you keep it. And he's like, no, you keep it. No, you keep it.
And it's like, they still care about each other. And that's why they, and like, then, that's why they won't, either of them will take the money.
Yeah, and then as soon, and so then the $200 just sitting on the ground. And then they're talking. And then he's just like, man, it's hot out here, huh? And Mookie's like, yep, sure is. And they just like weirdly reconcile. Yeah. And then Mookie takes the money and leaves.
Yeah. So, very strange.
Mr. Senior Love Daddy, a local DJ, dedicates a song to Radio Raheem. The film ends with two quotations that express different views about violence, one by Martin Luther King and one by Malcolm X. It fades to a photograph of the two leaders shaking hands. Prior to the credits, Lee dedicates the film to the families of six victims of brutality or racial violence: Eleanor Bumpers, Michael Griffith, Arthur Miller Jr., Edmund Perry, Yvonne Smallwood, and Michael Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
So, the ending is the Radio Raheem where he dies, all of that happens in like probably 15 to 20 minutes.
Yeah, it's very quick.
It's very at the end. The whole movie before is just kind of watching Mookie.
And watching his interactions with the neighborhood and seeing how everyone interacts with each other and just kind of getting to know everyone on the block, basically.
Yeah. And honestly, Radio Raheem is not a huge part of the movie. Mm-hmm. You see him several times, but
mostly with Bugging Out.
Mostly with his boombox. Yeah. Always with his boombox.
Always with boombox.
But it's there's a very interesting, like, the ending's very interesting because you just had a scene with Sal where Sal and Mookie's relationship, I find it very interesting. It's almost like Mookie is his son, but like Mookie's fucking up and he's trying to be like, stop fucking up. But then when you see Sal and Jade, you kind of get the impression like, maybe Sal only lets Mookie dick around because he has feelings for Jade.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get this scene where Sal is talking to Mookie and you're like, no, he does.
He cares about
Mookie. And that's why he lets him dick around and do a bad job.
Because Mookie is
bad at his job.
He is, but he does feel like he's his son. You question that. But
then you have this really nice scene where you're finally like, that's really nice.
Yeah.
And then you have the teens and they're knocking on the door and Mookie's like, get out. And they're like, shut up, Mookie. And he's like, no, let them in. Like, come on.
And
we'll give them a
the
slice.
Ensuing events would have never happened if he hadn't loved
Done
those
that.
Kids.
I know.
Loved those kids enough to let them
been
in.
Locked. I know. And so then you have the burst in. So you have Radio Raheem and Bugging Out. I'm not really going to put Smiley in this crowd because I don't really feel like
Smiley's just there.
Much. They're yelling at him, and he's like, get out. He really doesn't like Bugging Out. Him and Bugging Out do not get along.
Mm-hmm. It's been established that they don't get along.
And so they come in, and they start this fight.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones freaking out, and that is true. Like, they come in and start the altercation. But then...
And no one's freaking out at first.
But then, Sal...
Is racist.
He does a racist thing, and suddenly he loses the crowd.
Yeah.
And then he does a worse thing. Because he breaks Radio Raheem's boombox, which is a huge deal.
Huge
and
deal.
Everybody knows it.
Yeah.
Everybody in the store is like...
And Sal knows it's a big deal,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, of course. Because you have to consider, that boombox probably took years
to save up for.
Years.
Yeah. And it was probably a big deal when he got it.
Oh, yeah. And it's his personality.
Yeah. I mean, his name is Radio Raheem.
Literally. He calls himself that.
Yeah.
So... But then... Radio Raheem starts strangling Sal to death.
Yeah.
And you're like, he is, and it's not like a little brawl and everyone.
No, he's like literally
he's killing Sal. And so when the cops show up, it's like, the cops kind of needed to show up, almost.
They needed to get him off of him.
Because Sal is dying.
Yeah.
Sal's an old man. But then, it's like, the cops just make everything worse.
Yeah.
Because they kill Radio Raheem. And Radio Raheem is resisting arrest. He is freaking out. He is a big guy. He was strangling a man to death.
But then the cop strangles him, and you can see the other cops recognizing that that is what's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. And you see everyone freaking out.
Yeah.
And it's weird because it's like everyone blames Sal and his sons. I mean, really, Sal.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, where is the line here? Because this is a kind of situation in which you, if you were a person who was not afraid of the cops, you would call the cops.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, because definitely.
Because there is a really serious altercation going on. Mm-hmm. But, of course, you didn't see the lead up. And it, of course, leads to, like, Radio Raheem's death.
Yeah.
And it's like, I think what's so interesting about this, like, ending is it's not obvious who is in the right.
Yeah, and I think that that's part of what Spike Lee was saying, with especially at the quotes at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not that easy
yeah.
to see who is doing the right thing.
Exactly. And it's not so easy to be like, I think you can't look at it and be like, you look at it and nobody made good choices.
No.
But everybody made understandable choices.
Mm-hmm.
Like, should Radio Raheem and Buggin' Out have come in and started that? No.
No.
It's been, they, for half the movie, Buggin' Out tries to get people on his side and is consistently told,
Nobody cares.
Nobody cares. You're the only one that cares about this. He finally just gets Radio Raheem on his side and that's it.
Not even for the same reasons.
No, not even for the same reasons. And then, and Smiley, who would go with him anyway.
Yeah.
And then you have all this stuff happen where it's like, they shouldn't have come in the first place, but then they did. Understandable. You understand. They're upset.
Mm-hmm.
But then it's interesting, too, because it's an understandably upsetting issue, but it's also a non-issue.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you're like, okay, sure. But you're also like, he's Italian-American. He's allowed to have Italian-Americans up on his wall.
Yeah.
Even if maybe you should put some black people up on his wall, but whatever. Who cares?
It isn't a pizza. It is a pizza shop.
Exactly. And then he, and then you've got him calling them the N-word and breaking the boombox. Like, mm-hmm.
Terrible.
I understand he's frustrated and he's angry and it's loud and chaotic. And I'm sure a good way to make it not loud and chaotic is to break the boombox. Was it a good decision? No. But is it an understandable decision in the circumstances?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you have the fight. It's like, should Radio Raheem have, like, started to kill him? No.
No.
But
should the he's cops upset. Should the cops have strangled him? No. No.
And he didn't have to. And this is something they say, too, is, like, he didn't have to die.
Yeah.
They killed him and he didn't have to die. And it's like, that's true. He didn't have to die.
Mm-hmm.
And there is an interesting point to be made that if Sal had kept his temper at the very beginning, none of it would have happened.
Yeah.
But also, is it Sal's fault that his temperament is just the way that it is? And he's, you know what I mean? It's not like some random stranger. Like, he knows this person. Mm-hmm. He knows all these people. So, he talks to them like he knows them.
Yeah.
Because he does. It's interesting.
It is interesting.
It's interesting. And I think it's, I don't think it's a coincidence that Pino is racist.
No, I don't think so either.
Because it makes Sal look worse
mm-hmm.
in that very end scene. Because you finally are like, well, I mean, his son has been racist the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, but you don't know, but behind the scenes, Sal is condemning that.
Yeah.
But you don't know that. Neither does the crowd. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know that, but
yeah.
The crowd doesn't. Yeah, and I think it's this, there is the scene in the beginning where Mookie is walking and DeMayer calls him over and says, Doc, I gotta tell you something. He says, what? And he goes, do the right thing. And he goes, is that it? And he goes, yep. And he goes, got it. Noted.
I love it.
But I think something that people always kind of ask about is, like, why does Mookie throw the trash can? Because, like, Mookie, he should theoretically kind of be on Sal's side.
Because Sal was being murdered.
Right. And he likes Sal, and he knows Sal's not a racist, and he knows what DeMayer knows, which is mm-hmm. Sal didn't even call the cops. And nothing that Sal did made those police officers kill Radio Raheem.
Yeah.
That is clearly a police officer issue.
Definitely.
But Mookie, I think it's interesting, because you watch, like, Mookie, the whole movie, he's very much, like, he works for white people.
Mm-hmm.
He
is really good friends with Vito.
Really good friends with Vito.
And and there's a scene where Vito and Pino are wrestling, and, like, at one point, Pino's like, you need to stop talking to Mookie. He's just, you know, you can't trust him. And Vito's like, well, Mookie listens to me, you don't.
Right. But you have this, like, he also is, his baby mama and his girlfriend is a Hispanic woman, mm-hmm. not a black woman.
I have an interesting trivia about
that, too. He very much often saw, I mean, look, his job is a delivery person, but more off, like, half the time, his job is getting black people to calm down whenever Sal or his sons do something mm-hmm. bad. Or half the time, it is to get people who are upset with Sal or black people who are upset with a certain thing to calm down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's more or less his job.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, I don't think Mookie is a traitor. Like, I think Mookie's doing what he, I think Mookie is not racist.
Yeah.
Or anything. You know what I mean? I think Mookie doesn't have any, like, prejudices against Sal.
Yeah, I don't
like
think
some, so. Like, bugging out.
Yeah.
Clearly does not like Sal and has a clear, like, dislike of him simply because he is an Italian-American yeah. in a black neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And that
Mookie doesn't seem to care about that.
And it's interesting, too, because you have those three guys that sit on the curb by the yeah. red wall who don't like the Korean for the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't think a Korean person should be in a black neighborhood owning a business while they are unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, is that the Korean owner's fault that you're unemployed? Not really. Would you be doing what he's doing? Probably not. But you have that, like, that just, like, distrust, I yeah. guess. And it's, yeah. like, it's understandable. And Mookie does not really have that. He doesn't really have that distrust mm-hmm. of any of them. And then at the very end, there's that scene where everyone's looking at him, and he just looks, he turns around, and he just sees all his friends, his black friends, and mm-hmm. his friend just died. And then he looks around, and he's with three white guys.
Yeah.
And it's like, are you, what is the right thing there? Because is Sal at fault for Radio Raheem being murdered? No. Not directly.
Not directly.
Is it his fault at all? No. But also, who are you going to side with here?
Yeah.
You going to side with
and then
the entire town and people that understand your pain and people that are like you or people who... Because here's the thing. Sal is not, like, overtly racist or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But Sal definitely looks after his own before he looks after yes. Mookie. And they all do. All of them do. And all of them look after their own people before they look after... you know.
Yeah.
Mookie.
Mm-hmm.
And so he looks around and that's why he gets the trash can and throws it through the window. Yeah. Because that's him making the decision to do the right thing.
Yeah.
What he thinks is the right thing, which is, in this moment, he needs to side with his people.
Yeah.
And I think that's also, I think at the end that's really interesting whenever they're in front of the shop, shop's burned down. Just Sal out there. Sal's gonna leave the rest. He's not gonna rebuild.
Mm-hmm.
It's over.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, you betrayed me. You threw that trash can through the window and made everyone want to riot. And he said, you have insurance that's gonna take care of this. You didn't lose anything.
Mm-hmm.
But Radio Raheem lost his life.
He's dead.
And in that moment, the right thing was to give these people some sort of semblance of vengeance for Radio Raheem's death.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of whether or not you are directly responsible. Yeah, you didn't choke out Radio Raheem, nor did you make the cops choke out Radio Raheem, but you did not, like, do the right thing.
Yeah.
You didn't do the right thing.
You didn't.
None of them did. But it's a really complicated thing. I mean, here's what's not complicated. He didn't need to die. That's not complicated.
No, not at all.
The cops did not need to react the way they did. I guess it's kind of like this. It's like, when you call the cops on black people for doing very little, are you, if they die, are you kind of responsible for their death? A little. It's like,
yeah.
Did you make the cops do that? No. And I think in this case, you have even less responsibility because it is a situation which people would generally be like, this is an appropriate situation to call the cops for. Mm-hmm. It's not like, you know,
they were loitering.
Yeah, or selling loose cigarettes or something like that. It's, you know, it's a serious violent thing and it's like, you don't know what to do. You have to make a decision in the moment. But it's like that decision to break Radio Raheem's boombox ultimately
led to his death.
And And I think you can tell Sal does feel kind of guilty about it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's very much like a, well, what can I do about it?
Mm-hmm.
Which is true.
Yeah.
What can I do about it? Nothing, really.
It's done.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, he's dead.
There's this really interesting part where it's been established that, like, the Korean shop owner and Radio Raheem really don't get along.
Mm-hmm.
But after the cops put his body in the car and, like, drive away, the Korean shop owner comes out and is hitting the car as they're driving away.
Yeah.
Really, and really.
Yeah, it's really, this is really interesting because, let's see, the LA race riots, I believe, were not long before this.
This movie was made in 89.
Yeah, and the LA race riots were, oh no, 1992. So the LA race riots happened really soon after this.
Interesting.
You kind of, I think something's really, there's a couple things that are really interesting about this one. For one, when you watch this movie, you know, they talk about how hot it is.
All the time.
All the time. Whoa, my God.
It for is the hot. First, like, 10 minutes, it's for just the first,
like, wow, it's hot. It's a hot one. It's a real scorcher.
There's a whole scene where Mookie is, like, covering Rosie Perez's character in ice cubes.
Yeah, it's this very, like, hot environment. It looks hot.
Everyone's sweating.
Everyone's sweating all the time, viscerally, too.
Yeah.
Like, you see it.
Mm-hmm.
The lighting just makes it look very, not dirty, but like,
the sun is beating down.
The sweat is really prominent.
Mm-hmm.
The camera angles often catch the light on the sweat. And also, the camera angles just give this, like, very, they're constantly, like, very jarring. Like, very disturbing, intense camera angles that make it just feel very, like, off-kilter. Like, you can just feel the whole day, like, the tension is building
up. Everyone's hot, everyone's upset.
Yeah.
It puts you in that environment.
Yeah, it very much is, like, the heat is building up, everything is escalating and escalating,
mm-hmm.
and then, ultimately, obviously this leads to Radio Raheem's death. I think it's really interesting because you see in the LA race riots, which, like, obviously, Spike Lee could not have known that would happen.
No.
But it's this, like, thing where the LA race riots were predictable.
Oh, yeah.
Because the tension had been building up between the cops and people of color for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And they had been, the tension had been churning. And ultimately, Radio Raheem died very similarly to how Rodney King died.
Yeah.
And for very, like, similar dumb reasons.
Mm-hmm. Just issues that, like, things that are non-issues.
Non-issues. Like, things that happen every day.
Yeah.
Like, an altercation that happens every day. And people don't die.
Yeah.
And you have these, like, very non-issue things. And ultimately, like, people freak out. Because it's, like, that's whatever it is. It's, like, the straw that breaks the camel's back. And that's what you have here. You don't ultimately see the police having that bad of a relationship with this neighborhood. But you do notice that, like, the police are there a lot.
Yeah.
Like, the police, they're never really, like, in the scene, but they're in the backgrounds of scenes, or they are just driving by.
Yeah.
It's, like, a very over-policed neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that, like, the LA race riots so closely, in my opinion, parallel this.
Yeah, and this was in 89.
Yeah. And, in, like, LA, in a lot of communities, actually, the Koreans and black people had really close relationships eventually, mm-hmm. because they found a lot of similar problems and had a lot of similar complaints with the police. And in, like, Korean newspapers and stuff, they would talk about, like, black civil rights issues and mm-hmm. stuff. And it was a really, like, weird
camaraderie,
yeah, that you didn't see with, like, anybody else.
Yeah. Very interesting. I have some really cool trivia. There's a lot on this movie. The graffiti on the wall behind Mookie and Jade reads "Tawana told the truth" in reference to the Tawana Brawley alleged rape and abduction case in 1987. Spike Lee originally wanted Robert De Niro for the role of Sal, but De Niro turned down the part, saying that it was too similar to many of the parts that he had played in the past. All of the scenes of the corner men were improvised. So the guys in front of the red wall were all improvised.
Nice, good job.
According to Rosie Perez, her face is not shown in her nude scene because she felt exploited and was crying. She later decided she didn't mind and appeared nude again in other movies.
She was like, well, I got that out of the way.
Yeah. I bet it was her first time
Oh, I'm sure.
Nude on camera. Radio Raheem's explanation of the love and hate rings he wears is an homage to the speech that the preacher gave in The Night of the Hunter in 1955. During the 1990 Oscar ceremony, while announcing the Best Picture nominees, Kim Basinger caused some controversy when she ignored her scripted text and said, "We've got five great films here, and they're great for one reason, because they tell the truth. But there is one film missing from this list that deserves to be on it because, ironically, it might tell the biggest truth of all, and that's Do the Right Thing."
Wow.
I know. Spike Lee wrote the script in 2 weeks.
Wow.
I know. The key scene when Danny Aiello and John Turturro talk alone, approximately midway through the film, was partly improvised. The scripted scene ended as the character smiling approached the window, and everything after that until the end of the scene was completely ad-libbed.
Hmm.
So the scene when they're talking, right. Whenever Sal and his son are talking. Right. The film was inspired by an actual incident in New York City where some black youths were chased out of a pizzeria by some white youths in a section of New York known as Howard Beach. Let's see. Ozzie Davis, who played Demare, and Ruby Dee, who played Mother Sister, were wife and husband in real life and frequently performed together until Davis's death in 2005.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, this is my favorite. According to former President Barack Obama, at a fundraiser in New York City, he and First Lady Michelle Obama saw the movie on their first date.
Aww.
In 1989, when it came out, they were also planning on seeing Driving Miss Daisy. Spike Lee later joked that their relationship would probably not have happened if Barack had chosen the latter. The opening dance sequence with Rosie Perez was inspired by the opening credit sequence with Anne Margaret in Bye Bye Birdie.
Wow, I think that's such a good sequence.
Yeah.
At the beginning.
It took, like, 8 hours to film.
What?
Yeah.
That's it?
Yeah.
Wow, that's short. They're like, all right, guys, we're going to come in for one day, and then the movie's going to be over. You got one day.
The opening, the scene where Rosie Perez was dancing.
Oh, the 8 hours. I thought you meant the whole movie.
No, the scene where she was dancing to fight the power was written.
Makes more sense.
Yeah.
I thought you meant, like, the whole movie was filmed in 8 hours, and I was like, wow, those must just have been some of the best freaking actors and cameramen of all time. We don't need to retake any shots, guys. Excellent. First go.
The word fuck is used approximately 240 times in this film, an average rate of 2 per minute.
I literally didn't even know that.
I know, me either. It
tells you what.
The character of Smiley was not originally in the script. Roger Guinevere Smith approached Spike Lee requesting a role, and his scenes were added during shooting.
Wow.
The title comes from the Malcolm X quotation that goes, "You've got to do the right thing."
I believe that quote is said by Doc.
Yeah. The building Sal's pizzeria did indeed not exist before shooting. Rather, it was constructed on an empty lot by the production company and was subsequently torn down after shooting.
Oh.
Let's see. There was one that I thought was really cool, and now I can't find it. Oh, in 2009, Spike Lee became the first person of color to be nominated for the Academy Awards for both Best Original Screenplay and Best Adapted Screenplay. So he's the only person of color to be nominated for both.
Wow.
Isn't that wild?
Any, like, mid-2000s thing, or even now thing, where it's like, the first black, and you're like, no.
No.
That shouldn't be happening.
It shouldn't be happening. It's upsetting.
That should have happened a long time ago.
Ugh. A long time ago. This is really interesting. So the scene in which Sal and Bug and Al argue about there being no black people on the wall, only American-Italians, is ironic due to the fact that the actor who plays Bug and Al is half Italian, being that his father is originally from Napoli.
That's funny. Not that you would ever know that.
No, but it was just like, he actually is an Italian-American.
He's like, I don't care.
Yeah.
As you wouldn't actually care. I have a really interesting paragraph I'm going to read from an essay that is on a website called, like, it's like an undergraduate essay thing.
Oh, nice.
So this is actually an undergraduate nonfiction written, it was written by someone named Walker Valdez.
Mm-hmm.
It is an analysis of Do the Right Thing. But I want to skip ahead to the very last part where he analyzes the end. So it's right after Radio Raheem is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. When the camera pans to Mookie's shocked face, it reveals that Mookie has decided there is something wrong with standing next to these three white men while the rest of his neighbors and friends watch. The way they stand is very important because Sal is standing in the center and his two sons are standing behind him. Mookie is next to him, but his body is slightly away from them, showing that he is reconsidering his position towards them. He looks to Sal, then back at the neighborhood, and begins to walk away from Sal and his sons. The act is significant because Mookie felt a loyalty to Sal through his employment, but now a line in the sand has been drawn. After Mookie leaves, Sal's facial expressions becomes tense because he realizes that at least he had someone in the neighborhood literally on his side who ethnically looked like the rest of the residents who at the moment are not very happy with him or his sons. Seeing that tensions may escalate, the character Mayor tries to pacify the crowd, but they do not take him seriously due to his alcoholism and the fact that he is dressed poorly. At this point, the crowd is upset, but they have not yet decided to commit any acts of violence. The camera panning from a largely black crowd to the three white men staring at them shows that Sal and his sons may have more economic status, but they do not have the numbers. Pino's face shows that he may have been expecting this all along. The scene is very fascinating because at this point, Sal and his sons are not only just a symbol of wealth, but are now a symbol of any injustice committed against people of the neighborhood by someone who is white or economically more powerful than them. It's ironic because Raheem was actually choking Sal before the police came, but the residents have no way of knowing this. As Mookie runs with a trash can towards the pizzeria, he is not only smashing Sal's door, but showing his outrage and anger for being made to feel powerless by the police. Sal's voice in slow motion can be heard yelling no, but by then it is too late. As the residents loot the store, it shows that they are tired of being made to feel powerless by the police and all of those who are economically better off. While some destroy the store, others go for the money, showing they are desperate to regain the power that they never had. While the neighborhood residents destroy the pizzeria, Sal is taken to the other side of the street, where he is forced to watch in disbelief as not only his store is destroyed, but his economic superiority over them becomes destroyed as well, thus proving to be a remarkable scene.
Mm.
Yeah. So this is his conclusion on basically the whole movie. I think it's pretty good. Director Spike Lee chose to create a film that is able to both entertain and emotionally resonate with an audience by pointing out when racial and social disparities are not properly addressed by those in powers, they can lead to acts of extreme violence by those who feel powerless. The film is realistic in its approach that a melting pot of different cultures and races doesn't mean everyone will live happily ever after. Lee knew that in order to make a film about social issues, he needed to embrace the stereotypes of those issues in order to criticize them. At one point in the film, the police officers are driving through the neighborhood, and they say, "What a waste," while they are driving by. The residents outside at the moment were not committing any acts of violence, but in the brief instant, it shows the officers whose job it is to protect the community do not respect the residents they serve, and also hints at what will come later in the movie. The film expertly lets the conflict build slowly instead of focusing on the ridiculous stereotypes such as the Asian store owner's thick accent or the overtly agitated and hyperactive young man who can be seen as very pro-black. The film shows the viewer that these issues concerning race exist, but the characters do not directly confront them until the very end of the film. It is important to emphasize that these issues are not solely with race, but who is in control. It is the combination of those two things that take things to a boiling point. Comic scenes like the boombox showdown ultimately proves to be more about power and less about who has better music. And a riot does not usually form without years of feeding the system created for a group's protection and that does not benefit their best interest. Do the Right Thing is more than just a film on police brutality and racial identity. It is about the beauty and ugliness that exists not only in a low-income community but within ourselves.
Really nice.
Yeah, a very nice point, especially, you know, he pointed out a lot of stuff that happens in this. It's not about, it's very kind of like comic, like all the racial stereo, when they're just yelling racial slurs.
It's funny.
It's funny, but all the stereotypes pointing out that like everyone is a very over-exaggerated stereotype of themselves.
Yeah.
Is like true. But it also is like, even when everyone is at their entire worst, this is still the kind of stuff, they still don't deserve to die.
Exactly.
I mean, you still feel bad when Radio Raheem dies, despite the fact that you barely know him,
mm-hmm.
and that he did cause a conflict.
And it's interesting, because the audience knows Sal better than we know Radio Raheem.
And yet, you're still like, well?
Well.
Radio Raheem died, bro. He died. What do you want?
He's dead.
Like he says, you know, you have insurance, you'll get this back. Radio Raheem doesn't get his life back. Mm-hmm. Radio Raheem doesn't have insurance on his life. So, really fucked up and sad.
Yep. What'd you give this film?
Oh, a 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. Excellent film. So good. I've never seen a Spike Lee film I didn't like.
Me neither.
He does it like no one else can.
No one else. So, I have a review.
No.
You already knew it wasn't going to be good.
No, because whenever we did our Black Creator series, I just got so used to dreading the reviews people are so racist and I can't handle it.
Yeah, you already knew.
Ugh, okay, here we go.
This one was written in 1999.
Oh!
Which is interesting. I think it's really interesting, too, because it sounds like it could have been written.
Now?
Yeah, like yesterday.
Yikes!
Okay.
1999?
Yeah, 1999.
Okay.
So after the LA
Race Riots. 10 years after the movie came out.
Yes, and 7 years after the LA Race Riots.
Okay.
1 out of 10. Do the right thing. Avoid this movie. I live about 2 hours away from Seattle, where yesterday some big protest was held over WTO meetings that got so out of hand that police had to use tear gas and such to clear the streets from people who were doing things like smashing windows and vandalizing and setting fires.
Because you know you always have to use tear
gas.
You have
to use the tear gas because people are vandalizing. Chances are, I will bet, that most of those people have seen and were probably influenced by Do the Right Thing. As people...
This is 1999?
Yeah.
The movie's 10 years old!
As were the people who caused the LA race riots. And probably a lot of other violent protests, too. I love this. I love when people don't agree with the LA race riots. When they're like, yeah, you know who was in the wrong there? The rioters. And you're like, the LA race riots?
So the rioters are
in of the infamous LA race riots, which were caused after the cops clearly brutally murdered an innocent black man. Interesting. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Why? So, and probably a lot of other violent protests too. Mm. Why? Because to me, this sort of movie gives the impression that that sort of thing is okay to do. It actually gives the impression that it's the right thing to do. sure. It shows the trouble that people can experience from it. Some businesses get ruined, and there is a fatality. By the way, the riot ensues after the fatality, not before the fatality.
Yeah, the riot is because of the fatality. The riot wouldn't have happened.
The fatality is not caused by the riot. It's opposite.
Opposite. Switch it around.
Scratch that, reverse it. But it also features the central characters as the ringleaders of the trouble, and I don't think these characters are supposed to be people we don't like or feel for, even though that's what I felt about all of them. So they're saying, in the movie, you're meant to care for the characters, even though this person recognized that you're meant to care for the characters, although he personally did not care for the characters.
I don't know how you couldn't like Mookie. Mookie's super likable.
I know. Also, like... He says Mookie's like a ringleader of trouble.
Not
like,
really.
All Mookie does is deliver his pizzas and throw a trash can.
Literally. Literally. And he threw a trash can because literally a guy got murdered.
All he does is deliver his pizzas and not do a good job at his job. I think they're supposed to be heroes and free spirits engaging in obnoxious behavior, which is really sick. This is something I find really interesting about this movie, actually. The way that, if you were driving through this neighborhood, and you didn't live here,
mm-hmm.
or if you were a cop, or if you saw this on the news, the fire hydrant scene particularly makes me think of this. You would be like, these people are breaking the law. Oh my god. You've got a drunk guy that waddles around. He convinces a little child to go buy him a beer from the store. You've got three guys that are clearly, like, also drunks, and they're unemployed, and they just sit outside all day and talk about how they're gonna get their lives together and joke around, but they never get it together. You've got, like, these kids running around causing problems. You got the guys breaking open the fire hydrants. You've got them harassing that one white guy who accidentally, like, messes up that guy's shoes.
Mm-hmm.
But it all is very much, like, that's very, like, I'm gonna put, like, quote-unquote, like, thug behavior, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then, like, it doesn't feel bad. It feels like this very, like, neighborhood environment.
Yeah.
It feels like this everyone knows everybody. Very close-knit environment. And, like, the fire hydrant, like, that's illegal, but they're hot. And
it's
they don't
hot.
Have air conditioning. And those guys, like...
What would you do? I would do the fire
but
hydrant
But you also...
Thing.
Me too. You, well, I mean, probably not, but... I would, you know.
I would if I could.
I would be there, but I wouldn't do it.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying.
you have, like, Doc, who, yeah, he's a drunk, but how nice he gets, he buys flowers for that woman.
Mm-hmm.
He saves a little child from getting almost hit by a car.
Yeah.
Like, all these people do all these things that, mm-hmm. like, you don't feel like they are, like, thugs.
Yeah.
And the fact that this person is just like, wow, they did illegal activities. And you're like, who that's cares?
That's like the guy we know who was like at the end of Get Out was like, why didn't Chris get arrested?
And you were like, and he's like, well, he murdered him. And I was like
they were trying to body snatch him.
It's self-defense, baby. It's amazing. Amazing.
Incredible.
Okay. Never has a movie disgusted or angered me more than this piece of worthlessness, which is most certainly high on my list of worst favorite movies. I don't understand.
I don't understand that either.
I tried to read more, but it doesn't explain.
Worst favorite. Well, worst favorite movie is Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1.
A good one.
That's what I think of whenever he says that.
And this is not simply from the protest at the end, because I was pretty much feeling that way from about the first 5 minutes and on, after being introduced to basically my least favorite cast of characters ever.
So you're racist.
Basically, Do the Right Thing involves a bunch of young punks. One of them is Mookie, played by director Spike Lee, who works at an Italian pizza place with Sal and his sons, and hangs out with fellows like Radio Rasheen, which is what he says, Radio Raheem, a creepy thug who blasts terrible music from a radio he takes with him everywhere.
A creepy thug!
He's like a handsome man.
He's a handsome man. He's pretty adorable,
He's just a nice-looking young black man, and he's like, what a creepy thug. Literally gives a speech about how love will always trump hate.
Creepy thug.
What a creepy thug. Playing Fight the Power. What a creepy thug he is. And you're not gonna like this one. Smiley, a nice R-word fellow with an annoying stutter and bugging out or something like that. A beyond obnoxious and beyond loathsome fellow who does not like Sal's pizzeria because he only hangs up pictures of white people. Anyway, somewhere along the film, Mookie is told by a gent called DeMayer, who, an old veteran of the slummy neighborhood he lives in, that he needs to do the right thing, which I would guess means get his life in gear. That would make it, yeah, like DeMayer's gonna tell him that.
Yeah. DeMayer. I don't think that's what DeMayer meant.
DeMayer, the alcoholic who wanders the streets every day.
Get your life together, Mookie.
Get your life together, Mookie. Yeah, okay, DeMayer. This would make it seem like it was going to be some character study completely centering around Mookie. But instead, the film primarily focuses on five different subjects. Mookie and his job at Sal's, Mookie's relationship with his girlfriend, the useless subplot, those terrible friends of Mookie and their crusades around the neighborhood. They try to lobby for that stupid protest and act awful to everyone who passes by. Some heat wave, don't ask me why, and racial issues. Race is a very important issue in the film. I like that this guy's like, all this stuff that's just supposed to be leading to the racial issue, he thinks they're all like
different parts of the plot. Yeah.
It's like not a subplot. There is no plot. Nothing changes. The cast is mostly portrayed by people in minority races. African-American, Italian-American, Korean, Hispanic, etc. And while this could have been a great film about all races learning to accept each other, it instead comes off as a very offensive film about races wanting to stay incredibly exclusive and act hateful to anybody who is not a part of them. He missed it.
He missed it. You know, he took a swing and...
He missed it.
He missed.
It is incredibly ironic that this movie won an award for peace because the right thing is engaging in violence and they don't even make the violence look bad.
What?
He died! Did you miss the part where Radio Raheem was murdered?
It was on the screen.
For a solid, like, 40 seconds.
They showed you him dying.
And then they're like, it makes it seem like the violence is the right thing to do. And you're like, he died.
He's dead.
He's dead. Me murdering this guy's sister and then being like, is violence the right thing to do? The cops don't arrest me. Because they're like, I mean, I can't prove it. And you're like, but I saw her. And it's like, well, he said, she said.
He said, she said.
And then it's like, he's gonna, this is like literally the same person that's like, I would literally kill someone that like touched my sister. And you're like, But is violence the right thing to do? Okay. Especially when it's, like, systematic racism that's been building up for a long time. That's what the heat wave thing was about, by the way.
Yeah.
And,
Building.
Making you feel it's hot. It's tense. It's...
Everything's uncomfortable.
Okay. So, the audience was probably supposed to be all sympathetic when the fire hoses were turned on them, but I was so disgusted by the rioting and violence that if those policemen had been real, I probably would have thanked them.
That's disgusting.
I also didn't mind what they did to Radio Rasheen, although I'm sure I was supposed to.
What?
Yeah.
No, that does not say that.
There it is. Right there.
I also didn't... Oh my... Radio Rasheen.
Radio Rasheen, I know. You're like, you didn't even bother to learn the creepy young thug's name.
You just could have gone to IMDb, dude.
I know.
It says the name.
He's in there. He did go to IMDb. Just not to the cast list. And I can go on and on about my dislike for this film, but it will probably go over to the 1,000-word limit. But just trust me, this is one to be avoided because even slightly redeeming factors in this movie... Like Ossie Davis's character, that's the guy that played Sal, get old very quickly. Although anybody who does not care for profanity in movies will be turned off from this one because there are literally hundreds of swear words, and I am not exaggerating, a lousy film on all accounts.
That was terrible.
I know.
That was horrible.
I know.
What a terrible person.
He literally said, I didn't mind what the police officers did to Rasheen. You're like... Murder him and then kick his corpse and then throw his corpse in the back of a car and drive off. You didn't mind that?
Didn't mind that at all. Didn't affect you at all.
No, I didn't get it. I was like, wow, that guy was a creepy thug and I didn't like the way he looked. I wish they had killed him at the very beginning of the movie. I mean, I would have thanked those cops. If the police had just gunned him down in the streets, I would have been happy. The fact that he actually maybe made a mistake only makes it all the more worth it to me. Radio Rasheen made a mistake in a moment of tension. Well, I guess he deserved to die. I mean, Sal, he's a good guy.
He's my favorite, though.
And I mean, he made a mistake, and he doesn't deserve any consequences for his mistake. But, like, Radio Rasheen did, like, deserve to die because he made a mistake. I mean, Radio Rasheen did get upset after Sal destroyed his property, so...
So, who's really to blame here?
Probably Radio Rasheen and Buggin' Out for being annoying.
I hate people.
I know.
It's so annoying.
It's literally the same kind of people that are like, well, you know, Breonna Taylor did live in a house where her ex-boyfriend who used to be a drug dealer a long time ago lived. So how can we blame the cops for getting confused? And you're like, I mean, they could have checked up.
They could have said, whose house is this?
They could have been like, does this guy even still live at this address that we have a warrant for? Oh, no, he hasn't for months. Oh, I guess we could have checked that out before we barged in at 3 a.m. with unmarked cars, not in police uniforms, didn't announce ourselves, didn't knock.
Just shot everyone.
I guess we could have done that before we shot 16 rounds into Breonna Taylor with a minute and a half between shots at one point. I guess, like... But, like, it is kind of her fault for having ever dated someone that did at one point sell drugs and live with her in the house. Because, like, she did one time not make the absolute most upstanding choice a citizen could have ever made. And therefore, the cops are within their full legal rights to murder her in her bed.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
I mean, that sounds right to me.
I don't know about you.
The cops are like, we knocked. And then the neighbors are like... No.
No, they didn't.
No, they didn't. And Breonna Taylor's boyfriend's like, no, they didn't. They didn't knock.
All right, guys. Black Lives Matter.
I hate the guy that wrote that review.
Hate him. For Patreon, we will be doing Antebellum, and this will kick off our spooky season.
That's right, from now on. Well, not from now on, forever.
Until October 31st.
Scary movies, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Bye.